overall the Cooperative Connection, your weekly report on the cooperative sector, proudly broadcasting on Vancouver Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM, and online at cooperadio.org. I'm Sandy Goldman. In this episode, we explore the work of the African Canadian Agricultural Producers Co-op, whose vision is a future where all Canadians can access a diverse array of culturally relevant and nutritious foods that nourish their bodies, celebrate their heritage, and build connections between diverse communities. I spoke with one of the founding members, Edgar Ondaatje, and began by asking him how this co-op got started. Here's our discussion.
I'm really glad to have this opportunity to share what we've been doing. We're coming off of a really, really rewarding weekend. We had an amazing harvest, and I'll get to that. But to answer your question about how we got started, a lot of our members are students. Most, if not all, our members are recently immigrated from the African continent. And for all of us, we have a connection to the land. Whether you're a professional in the city or not, you probably have some land somewhere that you're trying to work on. And this isn't just the rural area. This is probably somewhere close to the city. Now, my dad has that. My mom has that too. And I would say that that's the same kind of ideology that we had here before we came together. Individuals were trying to get into farming, trying to see how they would get into that, but they faced several obstacles in the process of trying to get started in Canada. You know, some of the regulations aren't the same. Some of the land use restrictions and also the sort of supply chain responsibilities that you have might not be consistent with what we enjoy back home. And that kind of created setbacks for us working as individuals. And as a diaspora, I'm sure you're aware or you would understand that we're always trying to connect with each other once we're here, once we're trying to settle down. And these conversations would keep starting. Oh, so-and-so is really trying to get into farming. And, you know, you keep hearing this over and over, and then the question will come up, hey, why don't we come together and do that? That meeting was had at the UBC early last year. And that is when we actually decided to take this seriously, to bring it together as a cooperative. We discussed different reasons why we would do it. And I would explain that we have this goal to produce culturally appropriate foods, but fundamentally living in the Canadian context means we do have to respect what food production systems exist here. And whether or not we come with the expertise or the skills of farming in Africa, that doesn't directly translate. So some of these obstacles are what we wanted to mitigate as we got into farming. So we needed to actually create a network of supporters so that we can navigate this entry without making it an incredibly risky affair, right? So we've had amazing support lately from the National Farmers Union, from co-op incubators locally, including Solid State Industries. And this is how we've been able to actually have a land marching, support so that we got access to the land in Surrey.
May I ask you why you chose the cooperative model for your enterprise? Are people familiar with that from their homes in Africa, or why that model?
Well, I would say our understanding would be surface level at best, because most of the impact that cooperatives had in Africa kind of tapered out in the late 80s to the early 90s. I'm sure this is more like a global trend, right? So we weren't looking at that at the beginning, but as we started to understand not just the obstacles, but also the sort of financial risks and costs that it takes, we started seeing what would actually be most effective for us is to come together. Now, We actually went and spoke to some of the farmers who are leasing land to us and asking them, what are the typical risks you face, you know? And you meet, you know, we had this farmer in Mission next to some land we were looking at, and he said, oh, you know, we had some floods a couple of years ago, and that cost me a quarter of $1 million to, you know, to
Oh,
restore my
yeah.
land. And, you know,
Sure. The atmospheric river, absolutely.
and that, you know, that creates a certain kind of tension in us, that are we actually able to do this knowing we can survive such situations? And then once we look at the environment of support that are possible, it isn't that easy to get supported as an individual, let alone the capital investment that you need, okay? So it became clear to us that we needed the knowledge. We needed to know how to actually farm in Canada. And that brings me to the answer about what we produce. As much as we would like to produce our culturally appropriate foods, we knew that first of all, we must become competent at farming in the Canadian context. We must learn how to operate in the Canadian market, you see. So that allowed us to actually narrow our scope as much as some members wanted to do livestock cultivation or our home-based foods. We needed to actually take a step back and say, let's actually implement a farm model that has been known to be successful here. So we actually shifted our focus when we were looking at farms to finding farms that have actually been developed before, that we could have a sort of a working relationship with people who were there before. And it has been a magical experience so far, because that's exactly what we came upon. You know, we found a farmer who has kind of had a shift in their priorities, and they wanted to, you know, hand over their farm
Right.
to someone else. And even in the process of talking to them, they would explain the sort of bottlenecks that they were facing around how to actually make it not just productive, but profitable for them. And he would say that there is this huge barrier behind getting staff, because it's always a balance between whether you can actually afford to pay staff and have anything left at the end of the season. And when I would ask him about, you know, what different ownership or production models he could have, maybe like co-ops, he had no idea. So then now I'm explaining to him like what a co-op is, where we all come together and we help each other. And he says, man, you know, I wish I thought about that, because now it may be too late to start thinking about it, but that might have been something different, you know? And that was kind of something that was pretty encouraging to us. So
Let me ask you, you
once
mentioned,
again,
sorry, Edgar, you mentioned Solid State, that you've gotten some support from them as co-op incubator and that. What is your relationship with them and how have they helped you?
So we were welcomed into the spring cohort of 2024.
Oh,
And
great.
through that, so through that, we get not just a community of like-minded individuals, but then they offer sort of the infrastructure through which you can build out a cooperating enterprise. They're trying to create this network of value co-creators, as we say. So they want
Yes.
people who want to operate in different areas of the economy. You know, they've got cleaning co-ops, they've got mental health support, they've got, you know, support for new immigrants and underprivileged minorities. They've got different cooperatives, and that allowed us to actually plug into a proven, you know, a proven framework through which we could build out our cooperative business model. So
That's
they've got business development
right.
experts in-house. They've got
Yes.
grant writers in-house,
Yeah.
and it has been fantastic, because looking at this daunting challenge of how do we get started, it would not have been as smooth as it has been without them.
So
And
really,
I'm not saying it's just been totally smooth, but
but
you need a
they're,
lot of help,
yeah.
Ali.
Absolutely, but they're there to support you. We're very familiar with the work that they do. We've reported on their initiatives many times, and we know that they're helping new co-ops break ground in a whole range of areas. So it's really terrific that you've got this association with them and and they're helping out. How did you find the land? And what's interesting, what you said about the farmer, I guess the farmer's was maybe looking to pass on the land to somebody in the family or someone else. He's he or she or that family, and here you come along. It's an answer to a prayer for them because they don't want to let go of the land, and now you're in partnership with them. But tell us about the land, where it is, how much land, and what you're producing.
So the land is somewhere near Port Kells, just off of Highway 15. And we're looking at somewhere between 2 and 3 acres because our formal land is a 2 acre plot. But the neighbor of the property itself has been friendly to the previous farmer as well. So he was selling the land, but once we were there and we started talking to him about what we're doing, he actually said, "Hey guys, you know what? We might not actually have sold the land by this year. So you know what? You've got this season. So you guys can go on farming on this." So it's close to 3 acres at the moment. But we haven't actually expanded to cover the entire footprint. We're just expanding slowly as we build a like a operational model of it, right? So I want to be clear that it was imperative on us to actually understand how to grow food productively and profitably before we can now plug in how do we grow our own foods, right? That's a
Right.
different kind of set of
Right.
challenges. So at the moment, we have strawberries and garlic, and we're just getting started on other produce after that. Okay. We've had an amazing harvest over the last weekend. We just collected 172 pounds of strawberries,
Oh, fantastic.
and they sold in less than a couple of hours. By the end of the day, we were done. It's been an incredibly rewarding
This must be
endeavor.
very
We're so
exciting.
proud of ourselves.
Yeah,
Yes.
what a great feeling.
And
Wait, who bought them? Like, how did you make them available for sale? Just at the roadside, or tell us how you're doing this?
all right. No, so like I said, and I'm going to repeat, relationships are so important. It is so much better to have an idea of who would buy your produce, who appreciates what you're doing, before you actually have to go out there and just sell it like any generic product. So the farm was previously growing to organic level, you know, organic certification, no chemical pesticides, right? And he didn't have the certification, but he mentioned it that it's more of a formality, not that there's a process that he would need to change, but he had a list of restaurants and communities that he would sell to. And they would buy a basket of different kinds of vegetables. So, like, you would have Japanese restaurants that will buy, you know, some Hakurai turnips and a couple of other vegetables that would go along with them, as well as now you've got the fruits, the strawberries, and you've got the garlics that are easier to sell in mass, in bulk, right? So, we went through some of the organic vendors. And we just talked to them and explained, like, we're a co-op, but we're operating on the same land and through the same production process that the previous owners had. Would you be interested? And they were so receptive, Sandy. They
Oh my
said,
goodness,
"Hey, why
great.
don't you come? Let's do this. You know, come on over. Let's do this today." Like, you know, it isn't a let's set a meeting, let's discuss this and that. And that's what I'm trying to say. Because even we have jobs, you know, we have day jobs and we're not able to focus on it fully right now. Not just because, you know, it's not generating revenue, but because we also need to be able to manage our obligations so that we can put back everything we get right back into the farm, right? So imagine the pressure of Friday evening knowing that, hey, your strawberries are ready. If you don't pick them up by the weekend, you're going to lose so much, right?
Right.
And now you're under the pressure to do the harvest. But then at the back of your mind, you're also thinking, who's going to buy all this? Because we couldn't even estimate how much we would be able to harvest. So imagine our combined surprise of harvesting 172 pounds and having them all sold, right? And they were all perfectly ripe, perfectly delicious, and it's just been a wonderful feeling
Isn't
that
that
we know that we will be able to, yeah.
Yeah, it's so joyful and positive, and you had the connection to sell them, and I bet they're
Yes.
looking for more once they taste your berries and
Yes.
they're so good. Now you've built that
Yes.
connection, and you'll be one of the suppliers for that
Yes.
entity. Let me ask you, how many members are in the co-op? How many people are out there working the land?
17. There's 17 of us
17.
in this co-op.
Right.
Yes.
And let me ask you this. Is there do each does each member own a share, or how do you become a member? What is the investment? How do the nuts and bolts work of your cooperative?
Yes, there was share capital invested from the beginning. We started by putting in an initial sum and making a monthly contribution since when we took it seriously to formalize it. And that sort of allowed us to build a base of reserves that helped us, respond to the ongoing needs of the farm. And we made the decision to not accept new members until we go through at least one planting season and we see how it's gone and we see what sort of demands it would place on us. I mean, I'll be honest with you, it's not that easy to plan out, how are we going to divide the labor given people's different work hours and also given the geographic variability. Some people live in Surrey, but most of us actually in Vancouver, right? So you understand how challenging it would be to go to the farm in the afternoon after work when the traffic is so bad
Oh, yeah.
up there, right? So we have to actually figure out workarounds. The good thing is we've got members who don't work in the middle of the week, like between Tuesday and Thursday we're free. That's we've got other members who are free on the weekends, so we've been able to make sure that, we could have regular visits on the farm. And then on the days that we need a lot of people on the ground, we can mobilize and make the personal sacrifices that are needed. So it is so important that, you rely on a community, that you rely on the relationships you have, because some of these challenges, you can't have enough money to solve them, because even if you have money, that doesn't guarantee that this person is putting in their heart and making sure they're getting in there until the job is done, right? And these are the sorts of challenges that the previous owner had, and we're starting to see what makes it an advantage to be a cooperative, right? Because when you have smaller problems like putting up a hoop house, which is something which you're paying a contractor maybe a couple thousand bucks, or you're paying people from the outside, you're not sure how long it'll take. But for us, we just agree. We're all going on this day. And we go, and in a couple of hours, we put it up together. Another similar situation happened with the irrigation lines. So obviously, some of them are taken out of the farm in the winter, and then they might have been tangled up. So you can imagine several hundred feet of drip lines that are just tangled up in balls. And the previous farmer had come onto the farm on that day so that he could take us through operating a lot of different aspects of the equipment. And he looked at it and he said, "Oh man, I don't know how we're going to solve this. Let's see if we can get a couple of people on." A handful of us showed up. And we just did it so quick. He said, "Man, I am shocked how fast and easy this is when you've got a lot of people. I understand now what this is working." So,
Yeah.
there is this way,
Yes.
once you're on the ground, you see what having people does, right?
They say that
So that's a second example.
many hands make light work, and the fact that you're all doing this
Very true.
together, and I'm inferring that as a cooperative, it's one member, one vote. You're adhering to that.
Yes,
And
yes.
everyone's invested, not only financially, but I think with their hearts.
Yes.
to make this work and their
Yes.
backs and their hands and their ideas. And it must be incredibly
Yes.
satisfying to be on the ground floor of something so new and so
Yes.
exciting. Now, one of your long-term goals, I guess, is to start to produce foods
Yes.
that are
Yes.
culturally relevant to the African community. Tell us
Yes.
a bit what you're hoping to plant in the future.
So, like I said, we've got members from West Africa and we've got members from the East. So culturally, we might consume different kind of vegetables. You know, you could have the amaranth leaves and cassava. You've got the black nightshade, water leaf. There's the African cabbage. And then there's these traditional African leafy vegetables. So in my particular community, we have some like managu and suga. So those are some of them. They're incredibly rich in, you know, iron and vitamins B6, protein and fiber. Then you also have cassava, you know, sweet potatoes, yams, cowpeas. Those are the kinds of things we want to grow. But another thing that came up as we're building this out is, you know, there is a gap in somebody who could even produce the seedlings for this, right?
Right. Yeah.
So we might as well say, you know, we can think of producing the food, but then there's also this way we could set up a platform for which other members of the African diaspora, whoever for that fact is interested, they can just get the seeds from us, right?
And I'm
So this
just
is the
gonna
sort of thing we're thinking about.
Right, and I'm just going to suggest maybe connecting with the BC Eco Seed Co-op. I don't know if you're
Yeah.
familiar with them, but they might be a very good partner for you, and they might already have some seeds established or want to work with you. We've spoken to them
Yes.
many times. Are the various plants and vegetables that you've mentioned here, would they do well in the soil and conditions in Surrey at your land?
So now is when we get to try that. We earlier on in the growing season, we made a decision that we were dedicating 85% of our resources to a proven farm model. And then 15 is more experimental, right? So we're gonna grow most of the produce that has been proven to work so that we can also be able to procure the equipment and the tools that we will need to actually secure more efficient production going forward. So there is this sense of like we're still building it up, and that's quite fine because if the farm itself, its output is allowing us to get this equipment, then that's an amazing kind of situation where we're learning how to farm, but at the same time, product of our work is what's feeding into empowering us to actually build out this vision of our culturally appropriate foods, right? So the longer term of this, Sandy, is that you're going to have 17 Africans in Vancouver in a couple of years. You know, they're experienced in growing produce in this lower mainland, and we'll be able to expand outwards. Think of their children, think of their relatives and the people in their networks. We'll be able to spread this out, and you know, that can be an amazing source of resilience, an amazing place for us to commune, to share with each other some of these aspects of our foundation of where we came from. And after all, it's healthy, right? There's also that aspect.
Yeah,
It's
for
good for
sure.
us, right?
Yeah, it's good in so many ways for all of
Yeah.
you and for the community and for people to get to know you and the work that
Yeah.
you're doing and also the you know more about your culture and you know build bridges. I have two more quick questions before we go. Have you been in contact with the Young Agrarian Society at all?
Absolutely.
Are
Absolutely.
they
We actually had
supportive?
absolutely, actually. We got our land marching through a member from there, and she's been incredibly helpful. And we're eternally grateful. I cannot say enough about how instrumental they've been because there are many times that, you know, we were getting skeptical. We were wondering if this will work. And imagine after spending more than a year looking for land, At some point you wonder, hey, will we ever be able to do this? Because that's not even the farming, right? And she kept going, and it's been remarkable, and we're very, very humbled and inspired by it. The young agrarians have been great.
Yeah, they're terrific. From the interviews that I've done over the years with people who are farming, they're just so dedicated, and you just couldn't meet nicer people who, are working hard, love of the land, and want to help out. Like it's an open, friendly group of folk. Are any of your members, you said your students, are any of them studying agriculture or land and food at this time, or your backgrounds are quite diverse away from this?
Yes, our backgrounds are diverse, but my partner is a member of the co-op. She actually was more and is more involved in it, nudging me in along the way too. And she's doing her grad studies regarding food production and alternative proteins. And it's actually provided an amazing platform for me and the other members to actually see not just what the future can be, but to actually engage with farmers in this province. Through her, I've managed to meet an incredible number of diverse farmers across the province. We've traveled to all sorts of different towns. We've gone all the way to Invermere, we've gone to Kimberley, we've gone to Agassiz, to Kent, and there's so much to see. And I will tell you that the happiest people I've met in BC are farmers.
There you go. That's, I rest my case. Like I said, open, collaborative, right? Really with their hearts and their hands, producing the food that we eat and we need, right? And they deserve our thanks and respect.
Allow me to also just comment on something I think is really important. Looking at resourcefulness as currency. This is something that may not be as valid in the corporate sector, in the urban areas, in the various jobs we might have, where we have quite regimented roles and duties. But you can think differently about yourself as a worker, as an individual, where being resourceful makes you an anchor in a community. And it is something that reaps incredible rewards, way more than what you can pay for at market price, So if we have a way to invest in ourselves to be resources to the community, it pays itself back through all the different things that we need that people will happily provide and share, right?
I think we're going to end it there. You summed it up best. Being resourceful, collaborating, being resilient, creative, and doing something that you love. And it's a really, really great story. The African Canadian Agricultural Producers Co-op, very new, but very exciting. Thank you so much for spending time with us. And we look forward to talking to you further about the work that you're doing. Thank you, Edgar.
Thank you, Sandy.
That was Edgar Ondati of the African Canadian Agricultural Producers Co-op. For more information, go to acapc.ca. That's it for this edition of Each for All the Cooperative Connection. Thanks to my fellow cooperator, Joshua Peterman, for putting all the pieces together. I'm Sandy Goldman. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and have a cooperative week.